results. Do I have a motion to do that?
So moved.
I'll second.
Is there any additions or corrections or changes to the minutes that anybody would like to make? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Marissa, you're up. I will let you introduce yourself. And
hi, my name is Melissa Sutton. I work with Clark County Public Health. I'm an environmental health specialist. We've been with Clark County for 12 years this month, and I've been an environmental health specialist for, 15 now. So I'll do a presentation for you later on, just show you a little bit of what we're doing at public health and the work that we're doing and what we're seeing out in the field.
And do you want an update for Chuck?
It's that part already.
Yeah,
well, it's just the quick update.
I'm just going to do that all at the same time. So I wanted to share with you guys that we received a permit application from the City of Washougal to have a stormwater decant facility. We received that application on October 20th. We have 90 days to provide either approval or denial of the application. We've sent a copy electronically to Washington State Department of Ecology for them to review in conjunction with our department, and we'll also be sending that out to agency review. I've worked with Chuck, and we're going to allow public the opportunity to provide comment and feedback as well. That way, as SWAC members, you're also hearing back from potential constituents. It will be at the current wastewater treatment facility that's in Washougal, so it won't be a newly sited facility, so I don't anticipate there to be many problems in that regard. They've already gone through SEPA review process back in 2013, and all of that information will be provided electronically to you, hopefully by the first part of December. And our hope is that the January meeting for SWAC, that we would be able to discuss, get feedback from the SWAC members at that point. If you have concerns or accolades for the project, any improvements or comments that we should include in our recommendation for them moving forward. And then also, if it's all right with the SWAC Commission, we would like to invite public if they would like to advise SWAC or notify you of their concerns at that meeting, to be able to have that kind of, it's not a public hearing per se, isn't necessarily required, but I just want to give, we wanted to give an air of transparency and really community involvement, since it is a community project, and a solid waste handling permit, I think, should always include the constituents of our community. So that will be forthcoming, but we do have the application, and it hasn't yet been formally reviewed by our department at this time.
Are there issues with the public right now on that?
No, I don't know that the public really knows about it quite yet. Again, it's at the wastewater treatment plant, which is where this will be happening. Not like odors from a decant facility would be any worse than what's already existing from the wastewater treatment plant. It's within their existing plan. When they did a SEPA review back in 2013, it was part of their SEPA review at that point. So it's already been reviewed and approved by the City of Washougal. So really, it's just a more of a formality in that regard.
To get the county approval for... Mm-hmm.
For the solid waste handling permit aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. This deals with what, the sludge and that?
Yeah, so for their, when their Vactor trucks go out and get all of the goop from the storm drains, all of that goes back to a facility. Currently, Watley Pit Decant Facility does similar activities for the county, and they currently accept City of Washougal, City of Camas, City of Vancouver, Clark County, WaDOT, all at the Watley Pit Decant Facility. And so City of Washougal, when they were planning in 2013, kind of how they're going to work as a city, it was something that they incorporated at that time into their future projections.
So this is like the places that you usually inspect?
Yes.
You know, where they dump it, and then they have a runoff and a leach collection.
Yeah, so they will have the Vactor trucks will get the, suck everything up from the storm drain. The truck will go back. They'll usually have one side where they dewater, dump, dewater, drive around to the other side, dump out the solids. And they'll usually dry the solids, have that tested. If it tests out okay and we approve it from public health, they can typically utilize that for subgrade industrial projects as Whatley Pet Decamp facility currently does.
Let me ask about the permitting process. Now, who issues the permit to them? Is it Department of Ecology?
Clark County Public Health.
Okay. But then Department of Ecology then reviews just the paperwork, is that it? And then they advise that everything looks okay to them? Is that how it works?
Yes.
Okay.
So they work as technical advisors for public health and provide recommendations. And
okay, I got it.
So it's pretty much an administrative. They're taking their materials away from the other pit and doing it themselves.
Yes. And the way that the plan, I only got it at the end of October, so I haven't had much time to review it. But from what I've read, they will start only accepting City of Washougal waste, but they may expand it to other agencies at a later date. I don't know if that, to me, it would be likely cost effective for them to partner with City of Camas.
Sure.
Would be an obvious connection there. I don't know if they would limit it to those municipalities or if they may allow private sector down the road. I'm not sure what their long term.
So it's Vactor stuff, it's sweeper trailings?
Again, I haven't really looked at it. They're only calling it a stormwater decant facility.
Just stormwater. Okay.
So they're calling it. So that would, to me, mean Vactor trucks and the stormwater decant.
From what you're talking about, it doesn't sound like Camas has one.
They do not. Okay. They currently take it to Whatley Pet Decant facility, which is located on 78th and 117th in that area.
Yeah.
So it's quite a haul for their Vactor truck drivers.
I would think they'd want to partner on that one. I don't know.
Yes.
Okay.
So that's the first thing that's coming that we're working on. The Civil Waste Enforcement Grant, the quarterly report, is typically done by October, but they've upgraded their system to their new Eagle reporting system, and they have not yet provided us training of how to enter the data. So that is coming soon. So as soon as our quarterly report is done, I do have the numbers already, just waiting to figure out how to put it in their system. Once that quarterly report is complete, we'll send that off to Pete and he'll disperse that information to SWAC. City of Vancouver, Rich is gonna give a brief update about Roofner. That was a topic that came up last meeting, and Public Health met with City of Vancouver staff and Mike Davis with Department of Environmental Services this last month, and we've made some progress. So Rich will update on that.
Okay, then you'll be back shortly.
And I'll be back.
Okay. Rich, that puts you in the hot seat.
Good transition.
He's been there before, you know.
Yeah, I know.
Is that the hot seat or is this one?
Okay, either one.
Either one.
I'll go down there so you guys can look at my face. Let's see.
You need extra
maps. So the brief update, we did a press release today on leaves. There's been some information in the news about, I think, the City of Portland will let people put leaves into the street. I think they require some payment to do that, and then people can just break their leaves in the street. So we want to be clear that Vancouver, Clark County, that's not the case. You can actually get fined for doing that. So, and we referred people to them. You've got leaf coupons, you've got curbside yard to pick up, you've got backyard composting. So lots of options. But putting them in the street is not one of them. So in case anybody asks. Then I wanted to talk a little bit about the Portside, a.k.a. Roofner, a.k.a. Boise, probably. So a few other names out there that we've gone by. I think a lot of you are new to the SWAC since
this whole thing was kind of dealt with, so I wanted to give just a little heads up on that. I'm not giving like a full report. John Wagner, the city's planner that works on the shoreline permit and the grading permits, is not available this month, so he's planning to come next month and answer some questions about the permits. So this map and understanding the different parts of this is, I think, important to understanding a little bit of the background. It's a 43-acre site. If you look up over here, there's arrows pointing down. So the purple area gets those two or plus parcels on the top, on the northern section, and that's the 19 acres.
Where is this?
Sorry about that. Let me orient you. So this is on Lower River Road. It's about a mile and a half that direction.
Oh, okay.
So the port offices are right here. And the entrance to the port is down here. And then the street with the cul-de-sacs is Northwest 32nd. That was built in the last few years. And I think they're developing some things out that direction already. So the map over here is sort of from some of the documents identify it. And this is the aerial photo. So it's kind of shown twice, once in map form and then once in an aerial photo. And this kind of points out the sizes of the different pieces, which is important to understanding how it all lays together. So the 19 acres, the purple arrow, that's this portion, never had a landfill on it, was basically a farm. Laframboy Road, I think that's raspberries in French, I think, right? Mm-hmm. So the Rufner farm was over here, and I think that's gone now. The 10 acres, the red arrow, that's this area of the photo, that's where the landfill was. And that landfill was used by Boise Cascade for clarifier solids for not actually very long. We spent more time trying to deal with the issues after the time when it was used than when it actually was used. They had had a plan to expand up to these 19 acres. They never pulled the trigger on that. They only had a permit on these 10 acres. And then the 15 acres shown with the green arrow is in here. That had been a lagoon, so Boise Cascade had the big mill on the river where the waterfront development's going in, and some of their wastewater was sent over here to be treated, aerated in the lagoon. So those are the three sort of areas we're talking with, and that's a 15 acres for the green piece. After tonight's meeting, I think Pete will forward to you an email from Anita Largent back from August 14th of 2013 that was sent out and included the consent decree from the Superior Court. And there was a resolution also from the Board of County Commissioners at the time related to the consent decree. And a summary of that was provided at the September 5th, 2013 SWAC meeting. So that minutes from that meeting will also be included. And then minutes from the January 7th, 2010 SWAC meeting, there was a hearing that SWAC held on a landfill permit deferral. And so you'll have those minutes as well, which I think will help fill in the background. The consent decree goes through the whole timeline for the what happened on the site. So let's see, that catches us up on kind of what happened. The short story is our goal, I think for all of us, was really to have this landfill go away and be gone. And that's happened. So the landfill now is gone. I'll explain a little bit of that. And the consent decree is the piece that ties all that together. Ken Leahy is a construction company. They're going by the name of 2600 LLC is the name for the project, and that's referenced in the consent decree. They basically bought the site in August of 2013. So that took Paul Christensen and Boise Cascade totally out of the picture.
So when you say the site, it's these three parcels?
All
19,
three parcels.
10 and 15?
Yeah, all 43 acres.
Okay.
Or 44, or whatever, however it averages out.
44.
So Ken Leahy owns all of those. at the time of that transaction from through the consent decree, all permit fees that were due to public health were paid. And then there was a bond issued. I think in the consent decree, I think it was like $2.8 million. So there's a bond that's been issued. Basic idea was if they start to do the project and then don't finish, that provides financial assurance that, okay, now the city, the county can come in and make sure that that work gets done right.
So he's cleaning everything up? Is that what? He's cleaning everything up there?
Well, so that's complicated.
The whole thing is complicated.
This was a decade plus of futzing with the whole thing after it had ever been a landfill. So this area was the only area that had the clarifier solids, the only landfill. This is the area that the permit deferral was issued for, and that was back in 2010. Basically, the deferral says we're taking all the material out of there. It's not going to be a land, and we're taking out all the wells. We're taking out all the liners and the leachate collection system. It's going back to be a clean site. They sample the soil underneath and everything and confirm, yeah, it's a clean site. That allows the permit to be deferred. So rather than saying we're going to do a closure permit, if we left the stuff in place, it'd have to be a closure permit and ongoing monitoring. It's better to get that out of there and really have the site available to be sold and used productively as light industry. It's in a light industrial zone. So like warehouses would be a great thing to put on it. So the permit deferral referred to just this 10 acres. It was all below the 100-year floodplain. So to make it useful for economic development, it had to be raised above the floodplain. So that required a shorelines permit. So that was obtained. And then a grading permit is also needed to move more than, I think it's 500 cubic yards of fill or 50 cubic yards of fill. So the grading permit also had to be done. And all that had to kind of tie together to be at the sweet spot so that would happen. As part of a review of what SWAC had done back in 2010, there are some conditions identified that need to be happen in order to do the deferral. The city had conditions, county had, public health had conditions, and so SWAC in their hearing came up with conditions that all became part of that. I think there's 26 or 28 different conditions that were there, and they're all referenced in the deferral paperwork you'll get. So the consent decree really was just on these two parcels because nothing had happened up here. This was basically greenfield, it had been farmed. So the what is the name of that? The consent decree was on these two parcels. And basically the idea was all of the material in here was to be spread in here and mixed in with soil. So it was mixed at a 2-to-1 ratio. Like one scoop of, I think, well actually they put in, I think they put in 4 inches of the clarifier solid, spread it across the field, put in 8 inches of dirt, tilled it all in, did that one more time. So the bottom 2 feet is mixed material, and all the engineers and Department of Ecology were all bought in and said, that ratio is great.
What's the problem with the clarifier solids?
Well, it's largely clay and then organic material. There was some dioxin in that because of what comes in. So the analysis was done about the concentration of dioxins and what would be an acceptable level under an industrial site. So that was kind of the formula for that. And then there was 8 feet of soil put on top of that, and it was all compacted. So this property now is at elevation 29 feet, which is above the 100-year floodplain, great for development. And what Chuck was mentioning last week is they were trying to sell the parcel, and the attorneys got involved, of course, and wanted to be assured that this doesn't, that you're clear, you're going to release the consent decree on this parcel. And there never was a consent decree that applied to this parcel. Consent decree said you've got to remove the landfill. So landfill has been removed, liner's gone, wells have been decommissioned. this site isn't up to final grade yet, but the landfill's gone. So the whole part about the permit deferral was said you can get rid of the landfill. Consent decree said you got to get rid of the landfill, and so that's been done now. So the actual physical work of removing the landfill has been good. The GRI, the geotechnical consultant, has said it's good. We certified. They've done it right. They've observed during the whole construction process. But the paperwork needs to get done on that.
And they have to fill it.
And they have to fill it. So the filling plan is they're going to be continuing to bank material in there over this winter. I think there's got like 35,000 cubic yards to bring in. And then in the spring, when things dry out again, they'll bring it up to grade, and then it'll be ready to sell also. For the lagoon part, the liner on the bottom has been removed. There is a little bit of liner around the side, and they're using that to, as sort of a working area. But it has been partially completed. They've kind of checked the soils below that. Water's all gone. But it's going to be the next one after they complete filling here. Then they'll complete the filling of this, and that's probably going to be 17 or 18 till that's done.
And then at what time does that get released from the consent decree?
That could actually be the consent decree, but could be released before these are final gradings done on them. So that's the next piece we need to work with, and we'll need John Wagner here, and we'll need to work with the health department. The consent decree was really the county attorneys working on it with the attorneys for the whole host of everybody, and with Ken Leahy. Ken Leahy obviously would like to get these, this property is in the process of selling. They would like to get these sold as quick as possible to get their money out. They would like to get the consent decree removed, because then the bond gets released and they don't have to continue to pay the premium on that.
But one of the things that SWAC was most concerned about over the years, and I don't know Mr. Leahy, I don't know his company, I know of them, was follow it all the way through and release the consent decree when it's done. Yes, it's clean. Yes, it's scooped out. Yes, it's all certified. But you still haven't filled in the hole. Let's finish the whole project before the consent decree. I mean, granted, he's got every reason to do so.
Yeah.
But that's...
And as quick as possible. Yeah, I mean...
It's... You don't get your consent decree released and your bond released until you finish the whole stinking thing.
Right.
Because we went through that for, like you say, we've been fighting this battle for longer than that was a landfill.
So I'm not sure on that point. Again, that's going to be the attorneys. And so the county attorney at the time, and I think Anita was involved, those folks are gone. The county attorney is the city attorney now that was involved in the case. So that may be helpful to have to have that. But the city wasn't really involved in the whole consent decree piece, so I don't know all of that, all of the details of that.
So who's going to make the determination of releasing this consent decree?
Well, that's the judge. So the Superior Court has to remove this consent decree. So they'll go through that and say, yeah, ask anybody they need to know. Looks good, and then they'll say, okay, we're good. So that's the court that does that.
Where's the fill coming from? That's a lot of dirt.
You know, I don't have details on that. I know that they're bringing it from a variety of different projects. If it's
it's a lot of dirt.
Yeah. And the geotechnical consultant is involved that has to make sure that it's all placed so it's, you know, stable and going to hold the weight of what's going to be put on it.
And it's not waste.
Oh, no. No. Yeah. It's clean dirt.
Gotcha.
Don, just to go touch a little bit on your question. Public health, we will be working with our prosecuting attorney, Jane Beto, and getting her advice and recommendation whether or not her legal interpretation is that the landfill and lagoon have to reach final grade, or if it is adequate that the landfill material has been incorporated into the soil, and it will be at the request of the city that all of the terms and conditions of the permits to which it was deferred to, the grading permit and the shoreline permit, have been met, and then at that point, then going to our prosecuting attorney for her legal advice, proceeding forward, and then she would make a recommendation to the judge.
My feeble memory says that the grading permit was a part of it. And
it was a deferral to the grading permit and the shoreline permit.
Yeah, and those were, the whole thing had to come up to the level of this 19 acres. And at that point, then everything was done there. We could say it was clean, it's closed, it's out of everybody's hair. They can build on it and go on with their lives. But we had so many wrinkles and delays and promises that weren't met over the years that I want to see this thing get done.
And I certainly will relay that message to Chuck Herman, my supervisor, who will be working directly with Jane Otto. But definitely those concerns should likely be reiterated next month when John Wagner is here as well from the city.
We met this week, Brian Carlson, our public works director, and Dan Swinson, our construction manager, met with Ken and Slade Leahy and reviewed some of what I've just told you. And the sense they have is that they've been doing an excellent job. They do great work and they've done a really good job. It really saved our bacon from having Paul Christensen, the cycle we went through for years in that. So I would not cloud your perception of what they've done based on that whole history before that.
No, I've gone down and looked at this. Yeah, I've gone down and looked at this in a 19-acre parcel. They've done everything they said they were going to do.
Yeah.
And I just, wow, you're halfway through it, guys. Let's just finish up the other half and get it done.
Well, and again, it's construction time and getting the soils and getting the time of year when it can be properly spread. But I know they're, from what they've indicated, they're in a hurry to get it done.
Okay.
Yeah, is that it for you?
Yeah. Sorry to take so long.
It's a big one.
Well, Don, isn't the bond also guaranteeing that this will be filled in? Is that part of the bond?
I don't know. The thing that caused the problem over the years is we'd had promises, we'd had dubious ownership of it, we'd had transfers of ownership, we'd had a lot of promises what was going to happen, and then all of a sudden nothing happened, and being good neighbors, we didn't want to sue them, and also being smart, we didn't want to sue them because they didn't have any money. And at that time, then the economy went down the tubes, and we were back to where we had been 5 years before.
This has got to be a very expensive piece of real estate with the attorneys and everything else involved in it.
I don't know how much of that was written off in a bankruptcy of Paul Christensen.
Yeah.
Don't know all that. I mean, there's a huge investment there, but I would think that the return on it is pretty good, too. And that's what, light industrial area?
Yep.
You know, it's got to be a premium piece of property.
Yep.
So.
Well, we've heard Mike say that there's, you know, this is light industrial property is scarce in our county, you know, because we can't get, you know, we're trying to get another recycle center, you know, set up and we can't find it, so.
Yep.
I just want to see it done. That's what I want. We have nobody from ecology, so you're up, Pete.
Great. And again, we'll be revisiting this in December. We'll have...
What is this right here?
City of Vancouver.
That's the city's lagoon. So that's that. They treat wastewater from a couple of different food processing plants there.
Frito-Lay.
Yeah, Frito-Lay is right up the road from there.
Western Malting.
Yeah.
And is it Neil Jones?
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah.
Okay, great. I had just a couple things. Our Clark County citizen at large, we did not get applications at our timeline that we were looking for. Bill had some good comments about getting that posted elsewhere, so I will take action on that. Thank you for that push.
You just call the city manager's office, mayor's office there, and tell them what you need, and they'll advertise for it.
And that's in your daily?
Is this replacing somebody, or is this new?
This is replacing Dick Baker, Richard Baker, long-serving commissioner.
So they'll put it out on the city website.
Yeah, okay. We did go back and forth on trying to look at some updates and also advisory recommendations from SWAC into 2016. So I did send that draft agenda along. We can keep having discussions, maybe bring that back in December, see how we're looking. With that note, and I know Kim puts these out each time, that really SWAC does provide, is an advisory committee, but plays a vital role in getting recommendations and advice to the Clark County councilors on solid waste matters, and then also our regional partners. One process that's going on, I share with Don, and we can possibly try to bring them in before SWAC if we're interested, is Metro's going through this very same process. It's called the Metro Solid Waste Roadmap Project, and Rich had also sent me some information on that. Thank you, Rich. Looking at long-term disposal options, they have some contracts coming up, transport and disposal, and then the private public partnerships they have at the transfer stations. They're looking at waste energy, dirty MRF, anaerobic digestion, plasma, so they're kind of going through it all. I think that's discussions and information really that this commission and what I think some of the roles are would behoove us to track closely.
If they could come over and make a presentation, and if you would send that
the brochure
out to everybody.
Yeah,
we're in the shadow of Metro. And I won't say anything except for they're the 300-pound gorilla in the room.
And that pretty well sums it up.
Well, they influence a lot of things. And what they do is going to affect us in one way or the other. Now, I would assume that there's going to be other bids for landfill. Somebody's going to want to take that away from waste management. So that's going to be competitive. At one time, the waste management landfill, it guaranteed Portland they had the cheapest rate of anybody, would ever have the cheapest rate of anybody. And for that, Metro paid for the whole landfill development overhead. So all the overhead was paid for by Portland. So when Seattle's garbage came down, Seattle got a cheaper rate because all the overhead was paid for by Portland, which made a huge stink, so they changed the rules midstream and said, no, but we get a good deal. They influence a lot of the stuff we do. Some of it's very, very good. Some of it is, give you an idea, the people that are hauling the garbage. Last two haulers that haul it down the gorge. You or I have to pay fuel taxes. Well, they don't, because they buy all their fuel through Metro. And that's a substantial amount of savings.
Is this Walsh?
Yeah, Walsh, and before that was Jack Gray.
Okay.
And we only found out about that by mistake, because we were taking these trucks in on trade-in. And you need to get the previous year's fuel tax reports. Zero. And oh, that made a real stink, and that's how they were getting away with it. Well, it's a good deal, but if Scott didn't know that when he was bidding against him, he's going to be a dollar a ton more just in transportation because of the fuel tax. So we need to watch what Metro is doing, because it does affect us.
They came out with a survey, and I was for some reason they followed me. The surveys put out by Opt-In, and the subject was, we deal with garbage every day, weigh in on the future of managing garbage.
Right.
and it was sent out by the Pivot Group. And as I went through there, I checked what they were doing, and it was largely wanting to know if people would go for incineration of the garbage, and of course stop the 4 million miles. They figured 4 million miles of trucking going up and down the gorge, the scenic gorge that we have, and all we have is Walsh's trucks running up and down there. And at the end, of course, they realize that they're going to have to put the ash and trash that goes through the incinerator is going to have to go to the landfill anyway, but it would be reduced, I don't know how much, but quite a bit. But anyway, they've gone out to the people and asked, would you like incineration? But they didn't say where they were going to put the incinerator.
Incinerators present interesting problems in themselves.
I will follow up with that. The Metro has two groups. One is the Solid Waste Alternatives Committee, which they also call SWAC. And they're the group that it's staff-driven, and they're the ones who are running this process, which largely is an outreach process trying to engage the community to find out. The other is called MPAC, the Metro Policy Advisory Committee, and that is a non-vote. We have two non-voting seats, and McInerney,
Ogle, yeah,
and then Jeannie Stewart. Mostly it's land use, but I'm sure at some point they might step in on some of this. So we do have some say, very little on voting, but
that's a new seat then for the county, because it wasn't on there 2 years ago when I was on there.
And I did double check that. So,
hmm.
She wasn't at the last meeting, but.
Yeah, no. The city was the only one represented on MPAC. The county wasn't. So that's a new addition they've got.
Okay. There was some other Metro news. I'm not sure if this will impact us. Scott, Rich might have input as well. But the SP Newberg paper mill has closed. And that was also, what was the other name for that? Rock 10, was it? And they were using, just like our mill in Camas, taking a lot of the wood waste from the Portland Metro region to burn for energy. And so that market has gone away. So 90% of the wood market has disappeared pretty much overnight in the metro area. They have recovery goals that transfer stations and the recycling centers need to hit. So they've rewritten those codes and taken wood out, because they don't want to have them be responsible for trying to recover and see construction waste materials that can no longer be recycled and recovered. I think we're okay on this side, but there's going to be a huge supply and also more competition for that material. And it's already a pretty dismal economic situation. So wood waste is not looking so good. And again, that's something we might want to track. The final piece over on that side of the river, and I think we do need to have someone come in sooner rather than later, I think it's in their best interest, is Oregon DEQ. The last legislative session passed a bill that will bring on several new staff members to look at waste prevention at the source. And it's going to impact, they're going to fund it through surcharge on waste going to their landfills, which is where we send ours. So we're going to have a direct pass through, and our TIF fee is going to be going up as a result of that. So that's something SWAC's going to need to be on top of. There's nothing we can do about it, but we'll at least need to track that one. They haven't been clear on when that pass-through will occur. I don't know if you've got additional information on that, Rich?
I've heard they were talking like April or July, and I mean maybe July, because that's when one of the Oregon jurisdictions do their rate.
Is there an estimate how much?
I think it was, I would remember something like 73 cents, but I'm not sure if that's...
Less than a dollar for
all. Or if it maybe was two adjustments in that total 73, and part of that's...
Per ton?
We'll, I'll try to reach out to them. If not, I'll bring
right
I'll
now,
bring
it
to
it's
mission.
$1.25 right now.
That sounds right. So it'd be going up
but
to $2.
It hasn't risen in probably 20, 25 years. No.
And again, we'll be paying for the work being done on that side of the river.
Yeah, and the problem, another problem, but
hold us up.
To reduce all the garbage going into the landfills is a goal. But the markets have fallen apart for wood.
Yes.
Markets have fallen apart for
a lot of
different things.
Shows,
and
yes.
And consequently, it's going to be a difficult.
This
we've got some difficult things coming in front of us.
This is the horizon we're looking at, and I think SWAC, in terms of putting our teeth, sinking our teeth into matters and keeping our counselors and council members apprised, it's a changing horizon. So
it's a definitely a changing horizon.
We don't want to get caught. So those are some updates. Again, I'll try to pull together maybe a Metro DEQ agenda item. I know this is running long too, we have our Regional Solid Waste System Steering Committee. This was one of our recommendations in our plan. It's made up of the Public Works Directors plus the County Environmental Services Director. We'll be meeting tomorrow for our first kickoff meeting. We have bylaws drafted. We're hoping to approve those. And again, this is a similar type effort to look at where we're heading into the future. So I don't know the roles of SWAC, and what I'd like to pull up quickly for you to look at, if you can bear with me, is just a flow diagram to show how these pieces could fit together. And I'm not going to go through this presentation, but I certainly can send this to you. And so SWAC's going to play a role here. We've got our solid waste management staff, both from the county and then the cities, the public works directors, who are the steering committee, which are the public works, and then they respond up to the city manager, city's council, county administrator, and the board. And so SWAC plays that policy recommendation role. Some outcomes of this that we've identified in our plan, and by the way, I've got some printed versions of the final plan over there on the table if anyone is a paper person. If we were to ban an item from the transfer station, this clearly would be more of a regional piece that we would look at. We need SWAC recommendation, we'd bring it up. There are quite a few recommendations that we've gone through in the plan, which I can also pull up or present at a different time, that if we're going to do mandatory garbage out in McCann County, that really surpass our staff level work and really get to that heightened SWAC level work, which is really where we want to make sure you guys are keyed in.
You'll give us a after action report.
We can definitely do an after action. I can put this on the agenda for the next time.
Outcome of that meeting.
I want to talk about. I got a question.
Yes.
Go ahead, Alan. I'm sorry.
No, I just was, after the meeting tomorrow, if you give us a, after action report as to what was discussed and custom discussed.
This is the first time this group's ever been pulled together.
Right, that's why we're kind of.
So I will give you the quick update after the meeting.
You have indication that you have everybody coming, or?
We have a couple alternates, but everyone is represented.
Oh, good.
Um, In all my years in the military, we always had organizational charts. And if I look at this one, I'm a little confused. Number one is that you got two solid waste units there. And I guess the difference in how they operate or what areas they look at is the primary reason for having two on it. And I don't remember the details that was in the plan. I apologize for that. But what will be the duties of the steering committee down the lower, there on the right-hand side as differentiated from what we do up the green one up in the middle?
And again, just for quick clarification, to the left is the county, to the right are the cities. So that's why city has staff, county has staff.
I have that, but I'm looking up there at SWAC. That's us, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. And down the right-hand side now, we have a new unit. It's called the Solid Waste Management Steering Committee.
Correct.
But there's no connection, really, to the two of them. And so what I'm seeing is, what will be the duties of the steering committee as compared to what we do? And could there be any areas of conflict and or duplication of effort? Because, you know, if they're going to be doing some stuff in there that we're presently doing, I don't see both of us doing it. I don't know. Maybe I'm kind of...
Well, it's not only that, but if we're looking for things to work together.
2-3, I think.
Yeah, it's 2-3.
Because when I came on board, we weren't working on that section that I remember. So.
And this was a section that was added back in 2006 in the initial interlocal agreements that tie our regional system together. I think our current interlocal agreements, and then those all go through 2021, with the exception of City of Vancouver's, which expires at the end of 2016.
Instead of this just being the Solid Waste Management Steering Committee, it's a regional.
Yes, that
see,
needs to be updated.
Okay, so it says regional here and doesn't say that.
I know.
There.
This is a chart that was developed some time ago.
Let's keep our fingers on it.
Yeah.
Let us know what they say.
Yeah.
This is the first experience of having the public works people all work together.
So just, you know, to answer your question, I can read it, or you're reading it now.
Because
it describes what their role is supposed to be.
Now, these are duplicated across the state? Similar things, different regions?
This formalizes, we have interlocal agreements, which are also in the plan, that we sign with all the cities to make sure we have the flow of garbage and recycling through our transfer stations, because it's a very expensive capital system. And this committee are the representatives of those agreements coming together to make sure that their interests are being met as the agreement is laid out with each city. And so the City of Vancouver's agreement, again, will expire in about a year's time. So that one needed a little extra work because they are the largest partner, and also within the city limits have some of the infrastructure.
Okay, then as far as functionality goes, will this new committee be doing any of the work that we previously had been doing? Is there any duplication of authority and responsibilities?
I wouldn't think so, because I don't think so. First of all, it's going to take them a long time to get their feet wet. Secondly, our position is to advise, and I see theirs as monitoring and saying, hey, we need to give you this feedback. We need to understand what it is the county does, what it is the City of Vancouver does. Because quite frankly, I don't think most of them do understand what solid waste is. They got a contract, Okay, the garbage gets picked up, fine, thanks. I got another committee meeting to go to. If I've got a problem with the garbage getting picked up, I call Scott or call Derek or whoever.
Yeah.
I think if you look at the last couple of sentences in this paragraph.
What does it say? I don't have
one. I'm going to tell you. And these are the ones that stand out for me. This committee, and I'm not going to say the acronym, reviews the priorities for solid waste reduction and waste recycling set forth in the Comprehensive Solid Waste Management Plan to assure that these priorities, and this is the part I think is important, are incorporated in budget proposals and work programs of member organizations that these people are presumably representing, to assess the results of programs and projects, and to assure that future infrastructure needs are addressed through operational practices and procedures. And they're supposed to maintain regular communication with us. It seems to me that that's an advocacy role to make sure that the resources are allocated to implement this plan. Yeah. If I understand it correctly.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
But they.
I'm not saying that they're going to do that.
Well, no, but I don't think they haven't really done that. But now they're getting started. Now they're going to have to get involved in it. Somebody's going to have to step up and say, we've got a north transfer station that's going to have to be built
right.
In whose backyard. And
right.
When you're laying out your five-year plan, folks, you need to accommodate that.
Exactly. That's exactly the way I interpret the language like this.
Well, it's new.
Come off base, let me know.
No, I think...
It's an advocacy role. They need to be out identifying resources to implement this plan. And do it in a collaborative sort of way.
Glad I'm not on that committee. It's going to be difficult.
Of course it is.
Old wounds.
If it was easy, it would have already been done.
Yeah.
Well, the biggest issue with this, with our timeline is come 2021, the transfer stations with notice can revert back to the system. Which is owned by the regional partners, with a five-year notification of Waste Connection. So that would take us out to 2026, but 2021 is not far off, and so we need to, if we're going to make that notification and take those on, and we can certainly contract them out, but they're going to be run as public facilities at some level.
Well,
and the public
has that been determined, or is that still being discussed?
You could put out a whole new contract, and again, I think these are some of the discussions that need to be had. But our contract has been extended 2 5-year times. It gets an automatic third one. So 20-year contract's now gone 35 years, and probably time, just like Metro, to look at how we're doing things. And we're in that horizon, I think. This ball has slid for a long time because everything's been good, it's been far off, and now it's starting to get closer.
By getting these middle managers involved in this, will you think that enforcement would be better too?
I'm not sure.
Melissa would have to run around so fast?
Can't answer that one.
Well, let's see what they do. Let's see who shows up. Let's see what they do.
Yeah.
You got anything else, Pete?
No, thank you.
Scott.
Hey, how we doing?
Another fun time.
I tell you, thanks for giving me some time this evening. I know the time's valuable. A little bit about why we did this report. First of all, we thought it was a great thing to do to have our partners know a little bit more about what's going on in our community. We try to do this every other year. If we could certainly do it every year if there was something unique or totally different, but every other year. I'm going to leave this to your reading enjoyment. I'm not going to go page by page, but there are some things I would like to highlight. And the format's a little different this year. As we all know, reports can be pretty dry. So we threw in some comments by some people that like us, some students and teachers and just citizens at large. So if we jump over to page 3, we talk about our statement of operating values, and you'll see the first one is safety, and that's by no mistake. Safety is our number one operating value, and you know, it's not a department, it's a culture, and it's really driven down incidents and accidents, injuries, and in our company, and we are the leading, in our industry, we are the leader. We've taken this very seriously. We've thrown time and resources at it, and it's paying off. You know, the vision for the future, you know, is our goal is to create an environment where self-directed, empowered employees strive to consistently fulfill our constituent commitments and seek to create positive impacts through interactions with customers and fellow employees, always relying on our operating values as a foundation for our existence. Quite a long sentence there. But, you know, I think that's important because, you know, when I look at Clark County, the cities of Southwest Washington, you know, we've had those relationships, and people retire, come and go, but we are a different breed, as in Waste Connections. We believe garbage and recycling is a local business. So, you know, 99% of the decisions are made here locally, and we're, you know, we value those relationships we do have. Over on page 5, again, through safety, the only thing I wanted to talk about there is really the, we ended the 2014 at an incident rate of 16, and that's been the lowest in the Vancouver Hauling Company history, so well over 20 years.
What is that incident rate, 16 per 1,000 or what?
It's 16.
What is 16?
That is end of the year. We only had 16 incidents for year.
Okay.
Yeah. Over on page 7, charitable giving. You know, we give to well over 100 local charities. We support them through donations. Actual hard cash over $200,000, and then in-kind services is just under $240,000. And in-kind services, there may be a charity that's putting out some kind of a fundraiser, and we supply anything from clear streams to help them, or provide the solid waste and recycling services at a reduced rate or free. Over on page 8, customer service, we have 18 full-time customer service reps and 2 part-time. And, you know, I bring that up because I'm really proud of that department. You know, it's not outsourced. It's in the United States. It's in our county, and it's right here. Those are good jobs with good benefits. You've got a real person answering the phone. And to kind of give you an idea of how many calls there are, there's just under 18,000 calls monthly. And in addition to that, there's just under 1,000 emails that are monthly as well. So our customer service department is very active, and we get some accolades for that. And again, I'm really proud of that department because, you know, they're answering questions, anything from, you know, new service startups to, hey, the truck missed me, or why can't I put this in the recycler? So,
but some of us are on call.
Oh yeah,
you know,
yeah, that's true.
So every time I want my garbage dumped, I have to talk to Shannon. You know.
Yeah. and Shannon's got her picture
in
here.
She's great. Yeah.
Over on page 11, a little bit about operations. You'll see about 3/4 of the way down under service. You know, all our routes increased in 2014. Roll-off increased. Obviously, you know, the economy picked back up. And that's good for all of us in this community. Just touched a little bit on our CNG fleet. That's part of what we're doing, bringing on trucks that are operating on compressed natural gas, you know, and we actually are using those in our yard debris service fleet as well as recycling.
How's your cost of operation of those vehicles compared to the diesel?
You know, it remains to be seen because all the trucks are fairly new. We do expect higher maintenance on them.
Okay.
They're more expensive out of the gate, but when fuel is considerably less,
yeah,
there are some trade-offs. And you know, that technology, as far as, you know, how the trucks are operated and the components, the internal components, you know, that's changing all the time and getting better. Maintenance, you know, we rely on our drivers to check their trucks daily and see what's happening. So we have 46 repairs are made daily, averaging on the various equipment, and 30 driver repair requests are made daily. Getting over to page 13, this talks about our three transfer stations. So you can look at some numbers. You know, over 24,000 tons of solid waste comes into our transfer stations on a monthly basis. Page 15, waste reduction. This is commercial. When we talk about commercial, what we're doing to help with waste reduction on the commercial side of things, we have assisted 136 different businesses at their location. We've completed 8 waste audits and 2 account audits, and we've distributed several large and many more small recycling boxes. We've gained 61 new recycling pilot customers with not just under 1,000 participants. So commercial recycling is alive and well. Over flipping the page to 16, the Green Business Program, you can read through that, what that's all about. Most of you probably already know. We made 5 green business assessments in 2014, and we've gained 7 new food waste customers, now with a total of 75 participants. You know, again, community outreach, you know, this is where recycle educators, recycle coordinators come in. They've staffed outreach booths, 115 events in 2014, and you'll see a few of those listed in the bottom right-hand corner. We developed interactive activities at 4 events and led over 35 tours at our largest facility, the West Vancouver Materials Recovery Center. Flipping over to page 20, construction demolition. We just talked about wood and what's going on there, but we did bring in a system to help sort our new C&D processing. And along with that, we have green certification programs, and we assisted in the green certification of 10 projects. So, you know, we have the recycle educator team, and they're out there in our community on a daily basis. Over on page 22, getting over to residential recycling, we presented on 22 different occasions. Personal assistance with 108 multifamily complexes. Those are always incredibly challenging. There seems to be much more contamination in the multifamily recycling than in the single-family dwellings. And we reached well over 11,000 multifamily tenants by doing that. And then there's some nice artwork on page 23. 24. Again, we're in the schools. We're in every school in Clark County. We've made 37 presentations to the various classes, and well over 1,000 students and faculty were reached through those programs. And again, you know, I kind of went through that fast, but it is some interesting reading. You know, you got any questions or comments? So you know, we're going to take this on the road. When I say we do this every other year, we hit every city in Southwest Washington, including the town of Yaakult. Right. And then also we hope to be in front of the county commissioners with this as well. Yes?
Is Alcoa, they're shutting down some of their places. Does that affect the recycling of the cans at all or anything? Or?
No, we have plenty of, that's the only commodity we have. We have plenty of resources to go with that, yeah. Of course, anytime a mill shuts down or getting out of this business or that business, you know, it affects pricing, for sure.
Scott, one thing, I see you've got our Finley Butte dump area here. I've never seen any pictures with the barge, and I tell all my people I've talked to that we barge this up there, and they give me the deer in the headlights look. Let's have some pictures with the barge. Yeah, you know, there's all these big 40-foot containers up there.
And you know what? We should be proud of that.
Yes.
because we're the only, nobody else barges this side of the Mississippi River. So, So we should be proud of that. And, you know, on numerous times when 84 has been shut down, we, you know, or the rail lines have been shut down, you know, we're going up and down the river. And, you know, we've got a pretty good transportation partner with Tidewater Barge Lines, and we're thankful for that. And we keep roughly 70 trucks off the highway daily going through the gorge. So that's always something to consider. So that's kind of it for the report. I would like to take just a minute and discuss, because I'm sure you've seen it in the news recently about the homeless camp and the homeless situation down by the share house. That was brought to my attention actually at the grand opening of the waterfront there, and what was going on there. And Eric Holmes, the city manager, got with me in, you know, in an impromptu discussion because they were having some issues. And that really involved right at the share house. And so we were able to, we brought in another container and we're servicing it 6 days a week versus five. But I bring that up, you know, because when we talk about partnerships and our relationships in the community, you know, that happened. And then very quickly, through an ordinance with the city, you know, there was a time when that needed to be cleaned up. And we had great partnerships with the city of Vancouver discussing that. The health department was involved as well. Again, they went in and they did their sweeps. We brought in additional garbage containers, and everything was loaded up that they didn't take with them. And that place looks a lot different today than it did just 3 or 4 days ago. So, and again, it was a team effort on that. And
they showed the sharps and various things that were in that stuff too.
Yeah, it was a there was vermin, there was everything you can imagine that goes with that. So
well, we had 80 in there on the start of a weekend. By Monday there were 150
yes
in there. So the word got out that Vancouver is probably going to give out a lot of benefits, and the next thing you know, here they come. So
yeah,
the city manager stepped up to the plate there, and we had police over there mm-hmm. to make sure that they're, and they also had some of their quote guards themselves that were carrying weapons and not concealed, they were on their hips. So
yeah,
we were afraid that something might get out of hand there, so they had to go.
Could very easily have happened.
Yeah, it was a little tense there for a while.
You bet. So that's really it for me, or unless you have any more questions or comments. Yeah. Again, thank you for your time. I'm very respectful of that, and don't hesitate to contact me. I'm pretty easy to reach and find.
Thank you, Scott.
Okay, thanks.
Scott. Thank you.
Yeah, great job.
Thank you.
Well, so you're up again.
So I have to fix the projector. Oh, thank you. That was going to drive me crazy. So I have a lot of little click-throughs. I tried to make it animated so it would be a little bit more exciting than a regular boring PowerPoint presentation. From public health, we don't have cool things like DES has access to all of these amazing presentation things, so we'll have to work on that from public health. But so I just wanted to give you guys a quick opportunity to learn a little bit more about public health for those of you who are newer to SWAC, share a little bit about what we've done and then what we see. I don't always have hair and makeup and look so glamorous. I usually have boots, a hard hat, and an orange vest on and look a little more plain Jane. So Chuck Harmon is my supervisor. He unfortunately can't make it tonight. He had parent-teacher conferences in Portland and wasn't able to make it back over the bridge. He did text me though. And so this has our contact information. If anyone wants this, I'd be happy to send the presentation to Pete to send out, but it just is really more informational and overview in nature. This is our new public health organizational chart. It's really small. I sent a copy to Pete and asked for him to send it out electronically to SWAC, just so that you can see who we are and what we represent. Kind of our small section for environmental health is this little section right here. So we, of course, the Clark County residents are our number one of who we're serving and our ultimate boss at the end of the day, and then the Board of Health, which are the counselors. Our health officer and public health director is Dr. Alan Melnick, and from there we have different kind of components of public health. We have a wide width and breadth of the services that we provide, everything from healthy family, chronic disease prevention, communicable disease prevention. We're working on the outbreak, if any of you have heard from Chipotle going on. So our disease prevention group is working closely with our environmental health restaurant inspectors on those kinds of things. Environmental health, we have everything from food safety, pool, spa, rec water monitoring, on-site sewage, liquid waste, solid waste, hazardous waste, zoonotic disease, so everything from West Nile virus is kind of our big zoonotic disease that we cover.
Fleas and ticks, is that the whole thing?
Not so much fleas and ticks, but we do get calls about them, and those get routed to me to answer and give them good information on integrated pest management. We also deal with on-site sewage systems, permitting, failed systems, surfacing sewage, those kinds of things from public health. So it's just kind of a nice overview of just kind of what we do in public health. You guys get the solid waste piece, but we do a whole lot of other things too. And hopefully you can send that out if you haven't already to SWEC members.
Yeah, it came out.
Oh, perfect. So just our public health values in general, prevention and promotion is really important. Educating the public of how to prevent public health issues is number one, and that's through educating and really promoting what we do to the public. Collaboration, working with agency partners is so important to what we do in public health. And data-driven, science-based services is very, very important. We don't just do things off the cuff because it sounds good this week. We really are scientifically driven and data-driven in the decisions that we make. We really do a lot for social justice and diversity, really helping those with socioeconomic needs and really taking those considerations into play as well. Customer service and accountability is important, as well as skilled and innovative employees. So those are our public health values, kind of overarching. Then we have our solid waste enforcement, which is my lovely program of one. And our objectives are to protect human health and the environment by monitoring compliance with state and local solid waste regulations and enforcing compliance when necessary. We always try to work with folks, do education, and obtain compliance through education is our number one priority. And when we can't, you have to go the enforcement route. And that's why we are solid waste enforcement at the end of the day. We also provide a lot of technical assistance and guidance for proper solid waste handling throughout our county. So our solid waste enforcement, we have a couple of key tasks in our program. Obviously, permitting of solid waste facilities. So as I brought to you earlier, we have our new Washougal facility. So permitting is one of our key functions and tasks. We inspect all solid waste facilities. This includes permitted solid waste facilities. So that would be places like our transfer stations, our closed landfills that are still doing monitoring and maintenance. They haven't terminated that post-closure period. And also our active landfill, Lady Island Landfill, which is still active at the Camas Mill site. And also exempt facilities. We don't get a permit fee for them per se, but we still inspect them, make sure that they're in compliance with state and federal regulations, local codes. And those are places that accept roofing material, concrete, masonry, and yard debris. And so places like H&H have portions of it that are exempt. Lakeside, CMAX is one of our big companies. They have several sites around. So those are a couple of the types of facilities that I inspect. We also respond to solid waste complaints. So any complaint in the entire county that my neighbor has garbage all over their backyard or in their truck or they don't have a lid on their garbage can, every one of those calls ends up at my desk. So if they're in the city of Vancouver, I work with the city of Vancouver, their code enforcement staff. If it's in city limits of La Center, we work with their staff as well. So we don't really draw lines in the sand from public health of city versus county. So we do try to have the municipality be the lead regulatory agency, but we definitely partner with them and have a really great working relationship. Participate in solid waste planning efforts. So we work with Department of Environmental Services and provide input and feedback regarding our plans for the future. And coordinate with state and local partners, Department of Ecology, Environmental Services, local code enforcement, Southwest Clean Air Agency we work with a lot, with odor complaints especially, and solid waste industry staff. So Waste Connection folks and other business partners. We are funded primarily by the Coordination Prevention Grant, which is called the CPG. The funds have been used by local health jurisdictions, that's that little acronym there, otherwise known as health departments, since 1988 to help fund the mandated solid waste enforcement programs. The CPG funds fund 75% of our eligible costs for enforcement. The other 25% comes from either general funding or from the permit fees. Typically, our 25% match, we call it, is from the permitting fees from our permitted facilities. And the funding for the CPG funds come from the local toxic control account, which are directly related to oil taxes. So as our gasoline prices go down, so does that fund of resource and money. So as you were all aware earlier this year, the state budget took a really big hit on the CPG end, and statewide we had a 49% cut in funds. Fortunately, they decided to allocate based on population base. So those larger counties got a huge chunk of the money and got almost 100% of their funding. So we only took about a 10% cut this year. However, the smaller counties like Yakima, Grant County, a lot of the east side, they really took a hit. So they took about a 60% cut in funds. So rather than equally distributing that 49%, they gave the five big counties their big chunk and gave the little counties very, very little to work with. So I think it's really important from a large county who has resources and committees and involved folks to really find stable funding sources for solid waste enforcement moving forward. There's only so long that we can rely on these grants and funding, but having stable funding sources is going to be really important in the coming year. So that's something as a commission that I hope that you guys can work out and help try to find some stable funding for those too. So our 2013-2015 grant cycle just ended in June, and we're starting up a new grant cycle. So I just wanted to give you guys a really quick summary. In the last grant cycle, we performed 114 solid waste facility inspections, and that's both permitted and exempt facilities. We had 305 solid waste nuisance complaints that were received and responded to, and coincidentally, 306 rodent complaints, so almost just as many rodent complaints. And for the rodent complaints, those do not have solid waste necessarily associated with them, but as we all know, the conditions that you have tend to have one or the other. But those particular rodent, if it's a rodent and garbage complaint, we call it a garbage complaint, so those are strictly rodent complaints in our community. So
On the 114,
mm-hmm.
you can have multiple visits, inspections per facility, because we don't have that many.
Correct.
How many facilities approximately do we have?
We have 10 permitted facilities at this time, with one pending. And the exempt facilities really vary. We have typically around 15. Sometimes places close, sometimes places open. So it kind of lingers around that 15. We inspect all permitted facilities quarterly, and more frequently as needed, which you will see in my later portion of this presentation. And then exempt facilities are only inspected annually.
Is that a state requirement? Or is that
That's part of our grant. They're all required to be inspected annually, but our permitted facilities, we inspect quarterly. So kind of going into facility inspections, what to look for. As an inspector regulator, definitely facility documentation is important, making sure that there are daily inspections, weekly inspections, safety inspections, rodent, vector control documentation is all in order. Making sure that they have their paperwork in place is something that I check when I do the inspection. Ensure that solid waste is managed properly, making sure that they're only accepting the type of material that they're permitted to accept, and that they're handling it in an appropriate manner. Address health and safety concerns, both from a public perspective and also staff. I try to do more of a broad-based check and see, hey, that doesn't look right to me. Does that look right to you? No. Okay, let's try to work on this. So you'll see some of those examples in the upcoming slides. And also provide technical assistance, collaboration, and guidance for proper handling and disposal of solid waste. It's really important working with the operators, working with the supervisors and the environmental consultants, and really collaborating to find good solutions to move forward. So I'm going to give you kind of a little overview of our Westman Materials Recovery Facility, which, as Scott pointed out, is one of our big, it is our largest transfer station. They have a lot of moving parts. It has always been touted as our model facility, and is in close proximity to our council members, and also is very open for public tours. So it's always important for me that we have a good face when we're showing this to the public. So unfortunately, when I performed my inspection at the end of April, there were a lot of issues. When I showed up, they had a site supervisor change without notifying public health. So their site supervisor had left. They hired someone new, and I met them at the time of my inspection, which was a little awkward. They had excessive bales due to a port closure. We had a port closure earlier this year. I'm not sure if you remember. They had over 10,000 bales at the site, which really ended up having some litter issues, some site visibility issues, and other problems.
Bridge cap was well informed.
Yeah, it was good times. The perimeter grates around the transfer station were quite dated and would get clogged often, and it was a continual compliance issue, so I worked with them to get that fixed. They had some repaving with major potholes. They had their compactors down a lot. Their household hazardous waste area had some big red flags, and they ended up having a broken water line. So a lot of issues this year that we've had to work with from a compliance standpoint. So those of you who, has everyone been to the West Van Transfer Station before? Yes, okay, no, not yet, okay. So I'll just kind of explain for those of you who haven't. So when you very first drive in past the scale house, you're up, so where you first come in, you drive up, and that's what's called the upper yard. So that upper yard is gonna be what we talk about first. That's where public drops off recycling. It's where they drop off their own household hazardous waste on collection days, and it's where you can drop off your own garbage on the tip floor. So this is what it looked like on April 30th when I showed up. They had excessive litter, overflowing receptacles. There were excessive bales in the upper yard that near the drop box, and the perimeter fence was damaged. So you can see in this lower picture where the whole siding is just completely split. So when the public comes to the facility, this is what they were seeing, which is really a mess. And my goal is for the transfer stations to look like a transfer station and not like the landfill and not like a dump. So so they had some big red flags. When I went back in June on the 9th, so just a month later, they had made tremendous progress. After my April 30th inspection, CRC came back. They provided a written plan. So this is kind of showing the written plan in progress, and you can see the improvements. So they cleared the litter and overflowing receptacles. Several bales were removed from that top area, although some obviously still remained in the upper yard. And then there were some air quality concerns, which you can see in the upper left-hand picture, just with dust. June 30th, I went back out. They had cleared the upper yard of litter and overflowing receptacles, and then several bales were removed from the drop box area. So you really couldn't see any bales in that whole area, which was really nice. The perimeter grates. When I was there on April 30th, you can see the old grates here, how they would just get clogged up. And this really became problematic at the Washougal transfer station. They had an incident last May where they ended up getting some materials that ignited, caught on fire. The fire department came out, overdosed it. However, their grates were clogged like these. So all of that water came rushing out, ended up being a bigger mess for them to deal with than would have been if they had had properly functioning grates. So having these work properly to maintain in case there is an incident is very important. You can see on the left, the door 10, they had a new grate being installed. They've actually widened the area. They have dug down deeper in the trench, so now they can just scoop a little shovel down and clean them out really easily. And they're covered with a slat that has holes in them.
And those run into a leach pit?
Yes, exactly. So this is the new door 4 and 5 were repaired on June 9th. And then they said that doors 1 and 3 would be scheduled for August. But when I went out on July 6th, this was that newly installed grate at door 10. So although the grates were replaced, they weren't doing the necessary maintenance to make sure that they were still being functional. So we worked with them on that. They continued. Door 3 was finally repaired. And then when I went out just earlier this week, finally doors 1 and 2, the grate replacement process is completed. They've implemented an ongoing maintenance plan. So there's 5 doors on the customer side. So they're going to do 1 door on Monday, 1 on Tuesday, 1 on Wednesday, 1 on Thursday, 1 on Friday, and see how that works for them. So I was happy that the grates have all been replaced and they now have a plan. The household hazardous waste area. When I went there in April, I observed a spill that had not been cleaned up properly, which you can see on the left was just, they had put down some absorbent material. And when directed to clean, the staff did not utilize proper tools or resources. You can see the little wind blower there. He decided to just blow that right toward the storm drain. So we stopped the employee from proceeding, and I directed the site supervisor to review their safety plan and their spills protocol and inform them that they need to have some good staff training and timely cleanup and work with them on that.
Is that an ongoing thing with turnovers that it's tough to keep everybody up to speed?
It can be. Typically, they're pretty good about the spills and there's not absorbent material left behind, but it definitely is something that needs to be watched and looked after.
Especially now with the rains.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. So also on the 30th, the household hazardous waste area, the used drums, they were not sealed. They're required to be sealed when not in use. So you can see the drum here, I was just able to lift it up and see what was inside. The one in the middle there was just halfway latched. And also their signage. You couldn't even tell what materials went in what bay. They were handwritten signs, like these little teeny tiny, the duct tape was more visible than what it actually talked about. And then in the lower part was everything that could go into that bay if you could read the sign. So from a safety perspective, that was something that we definitely wanted to work with them. When I went back in June, the drums were stored over the containment grates. So they're designed that the area is sloped toward the grate. So when you have material, if that container were to leak, it might not all go into the grate. Some of it may go toward a storm drain. And also the drums, all of the labels must be visible, and they're required to have 30-inch aisle spacing per the Washington Administrative Code. And obviously these were stacked in so tightly you couldn't read the labels. There was no aisle spacing, so that was a definite violation there as well. So when I was there on June 30th, they got new signs. Woo, I was so excited. and then on July 6th, they have material that comes in on the tip floor that they try to pull and have that sorted. However, they just placed the carts anywhere that was available and free. So here you have household hazardous waste that's not behind the containment grates. So if those get tipped over, knocked over, then you have another spill issue that you're trying to deal with. So when I went there in September, all of the drums and carts were within the containment areas. They were all sealed. They had adequate aisle spacing. You could see all the labels. Everything was very happy for me. It was a very happy moment to see it like this. So some site safety concerns, just overall site safety. When I was there on April 30th, like I said, this was an unusually crazy day. That inspection was very long. But this is the emergency eye wash and shower. And as you can see, there's a large obstruction. So in the event of an emergency, a staff person couldn't even access the shower. There's also a bucket that you can see in this lower right-hand corner. So the eye wash station was leaking, so it was unclear if they even had adequate flow for duration and pressure in the event of an emergency. And there were no eye wash covers on the eye wash, so it was just covered in dust and dirt. So even if you did have to use that, your first burst of water would be covered in transfer station dust. So when I went back on June 9th, very excited, they replaced the whole eye wash station. Has a cover now, you push the lever, pops right up. Unfortunately, they had no water at the facility that day, so they couldn't show me that it was working. And so I got to point out to them that they needed to have some temporary eye wash procedures in place in the event there was an emergency while the water was out. So I had them place the emergency eye wash container there so that they would have that. But working with them to, you know, even if you don't have water, you need to have procedures in place to make sure that that's taken care of. This was the water line leak was identified, and that's when they had no water for a day while they repaired the leak there. This is the moderate risk waste facility. Because they were not able to move those bales for so long, it was a mess. And the safety corridor, which you can see here, this is where you would, in theory, go in and out so that you can safely ingress and egress around there, but you can just see it's just covered in litter and debris. So it's not a very safe safety corridor. So when I was there in June, they removed the excess bales behind the processing area. Looked a lot better.
Are these scheduled visits or?
No, they are.
Some are unscheduled, some are scheduled.
Some of them we had meetings scheduled with them, and so they knew I was coming on certain days. So July 9th was one of those dates. But primarily I try to do unscheduled. I feel like I get to see a truer vision of what's there. When I was there on July 6th, you can see here the safety corridor still is a complete mess. Also, there's this fire hose that, in the event of a fire, is completely blocked and not accessible. And when I was there again in September, they had new debris that was making it inaccessible. So we're continuing to work with them to make sure that their fire suppression emergency procedures are in place, that they have proper ingress, egress, and that their safety corridors are in fact safe for access. When I was there in June, it's summer, and right next to the HHW area and the transfer station where they join, there is a table there, and you can see that table had like a Pepsi bottle, maybe some chew, a Gatorade container, a little coffee container, a cup. So I did give a verbal warning regarding personal food and beverage items in the facility. Obviously, it's not safe. to have food consumption in the transfer station, especially near the household hazardous waste area. We reviewed with them the hot weather safety, and they had confirmed that they did go through that, making sure staff have adequate breaks, water, access to water, access to hydration, and those types of things. So we did cover those, which you don't really think about would be covered in a solid waste facility inspection, but definitely was concerning. Then when I was there again in September, I gave them a written warning or a written documentation on their report as a violation because they again had a drink bottle there. But you can see that it's really a cart that's intended for, I mean, there's all sorts of chemicals on there. And so when you have a drinking thing on there, I mean, it's a recipe for disaster.
Are you talking to the same people all the time and you're not getting the cooperation?
My inspections are with the site supervisor. So the drinks and beverages are through the staff who are working that area that day. And so it may be different staff that are getting that information, but it is going to the site supervisor and the management to make sure that the facility is in compliance.
I understand the inspection that you made there. Is there a requirement for them to have written safety manual?
That is required by LNI. Okay, labor and industry.
And then, so these things are in violation of those regulations.
So from public health, we really have the solid waste handling piece. And really, I see our role again as providing customer service first and foremost, and really being a second set of eyes. And so really trying to find and identify. I would hate for me to have been there on a Monday and they have a major incident that I could have prevented if only I had brought it up. So things like the eyewash station and the shower aren't necessarily directly related to their solid waste handling permit, but it is definitely a site and safety.
How many of these inspections do you make annually?
I typically perform quarterly inspections of each facility. However, given the concerns that were found this April, I've done quite a bit more at West Van.
And what were the results of your inspections the year before?
It really varies. Again, part of the problem is that at this facility, they've had a lot of turnover at the supervisory level. So that's really, really been. And I found out at the October, when we had a meeting in October, that the site supervisor that came on board at the end of April is leaving and a new site supervisor will be coming. So it will be the third one this calendar year at that facility. So it's a lot of turnover from management, which really makes it hard to have consistency and really keep the ball rolling at all levels.
Well, it's important that he be on the ball because I know if he's changing over three times, I'll bet the personnel are changing over a whole bunch more than that, and especially anybody who's on the picking line.
Scott may have more information about turnover rates that I'm not certain on the floor level.
Well, I think for clarification, when we're talking turnover, these people aren't being terminated.
They're
actually moving on to different facilities, you know, usually more responsibility, that type of situation.
Yeah. Well, and you've got some of them that are incarcerated, right?
No, we don't
not
have that.
Supervisors.
No, not supervisors, no. But on the picking line.
No, we don't use jail corrections.
We use them in the city. Yeah. There's not enough left over.
So this
and actually, you know, as you take this, our company, our turnover rates are incredibly low, surprisingly. You know, it's they don't normally don't have to worry about layoffs, good pay, good benefits.
West Van is the training ground, is what I've been told. So it's the starting point for leaders and managers, and then they get shift up and around. Is that correct, Scott?
Yeah.
Close.
Well, it's you know, we have a company wide leadership pipeline, and anybody that's showing promise or accepting additional responsibility is, you know, is tapped, you know, as we do have, we do have new acquisitions, yeah, you know, things like that.
So this is the lower area, the lower portion of the yard. So when you drive along the east side of the facility, and they've changed the format now, so actually this is accessible by the public now as well. So I just want to point that out. This is where folks would drop off their yard debris. So as you see the litter concerns, know that from my perspective, it's because this is really available and open and accessible to the public, where it used to not be as visible. Kind of used to be the backside of the facility. So when I was there in April, there were, again, excessive bales. Several of them were broken, and there were a lot of solid waste piles noted. There were safety concerns regarding public access because the stacks of bales were so high. It was really, and with commercial trucks going down there for yard debris and for concrete and dropping off the glass and the oil, and you have residential truck cars going down there, it just, the signage was really poor. It just was really concerning from a safety perspective. When I was there on June 9th, they really did step up and did clean up a lot of the litter. You can still see that the bales were really still an obstacle at that point, though. In the lower yard, they have a limited moderate risk waste facility where they collect the used oil from curbside and used antifreeze. They had a container there that was observed leaking onto the pavement. They had they have the secondary containment grate with this container, but the container was old and leaking and stuff on the side. It was not really doing a great job. So they actually made improvements. They got a new container, placed it on the grate. They've added an awning now to it so that the water isn't as likely to go into it. Litter issues were still present. They added some signs and some mirrors to increase visibility at that June 9th. When I was there on June 30th, they really had a lot of yard debris there at that point from the curbside commercial collection aspect. And so we addressed the size of the piles, rotation of material, making sure that they had a good first in, first out process to make sure odors were addressed as well. And when I went back just a couple of days later, they really had implemented that, and the pile sizes were going down. They were really getting good rotation of the material. The trucks were rerouted in that area, and all of the material is now processed within 24 to 48 hours. Yeah, okay. So I'll just kind of, so again, it was really good. So this is my last slide. So kind of in summary, following the April 30th inspection, we notified Environmental Services. We worked with them about contractual concerns that we had as well. CRC responded in writing, and again, giving a timeline, and we really worked with them. We increased the routine and follow-up inspections, and we scheduled a meeting with CRC, Environmental Compliance Manager, and the site supervisor to monitor the progress and continue meeting. And the facility operations plan has been updated. We worked with the Environmental Compliance Manager as well as Department of Ecology to make sure that they really are following the operations plan and that it really does match the flow of the facility. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. It's very educational.
Yeah.
A lot of work there.
We always have liked your pictures.
Well, thanks. Figure pictures tell more than my boring reports.
Okay. Let's pop that out. Well, in the interest of time, Kim, I might just quickly pull up our report. Thank you. Well, that just goes to show when you have an inspection, clean your room. Mostly in this one, I just wanted to pull up the picture of Alan. So that was the agenda item here. There he is. So you want to share just a minute or so?
Yes, I was there with the crew. It was about half, I think, from Waste Connections and half from the county. And a couple of four volunteers, of which I was one, and we worked at that pile. There was about 20 tons of stuff there, and we hit the center of it and got a whole bunch out of there, and then we took some out of another area, so we tried to get a representative sampling. And the report's quite good. Final test results was given to us, and I credit mine since I had that great picture in there. And I was shoveling it into the garbage can, and then they'd bring it over, and then they'd put it out on this table and go right through. They sorted through the recycles, and it's quite interesting what they went through. And we all have conceptions of what should be in there. And, you know, I didn't find plastic bags in there. There weren't very many. And I found a football, and I found some other things, but, you know, it wasn't near what I thought it was going to be. And evidently, the report kind of comes out like that, too, you know, that there was considerably less contaminants in the sample that we took. And I certainly was in charge of picking up whatever was in the sample because I shoveled it. And it was interesting. But, I was a little stiff the next day. Half a ton of shoveling was kind of exercising. But we had a good crew, and I think it was well run. And it was well worth the effort, statistically, too.
Yes.
Is this a similar thing that's done other places? Or are we the only people that figured this out?
Folks have done different efforts to educate, but I think in terms of doing our inspections and hitting the numbers.
They certainly didn't in San Jose. They threw everything in there and they pull it all out.
Yeah, that's what we did. Yeah.
It's quality control. It's that's kind of how I see it. So thank you for joining in. Thank you, Kim, for also helping coordinate some of that. We are looking to do our next round of cart tagging and visuals. And again, we really, working with Westband, we're trying to get a quality product. And you've seen the folks who are up there picking the stuff. You know, it's not a glamorous job. So we want a system that works. And which leads into the last piece, which really I don't need to spend much time on, but Don was talking about this earlier in the meeting. There has been quite a bit of discussion. Tierney has been writing editorials, came up with the most recent one, talking about some of the issues with the economics of recycling, the cost to run these large facilities to pull the materials, the changing of packaging that we're seeing at the stores and in the curbside bins and carts. And there's a good rebuttal on that, but again, I think the answer probably lies somewhere in between the two.
Is this based on cost?
The rebuttal?
No, this.
The move. It's based on cost. I think it's also based on the reality that you're competing against trash. So if you're going to try to segregate out recyclables, and your other option is landfill, there's always a competing. So
it may cost you more, but I mean, as far as long term, I mean, you know, it's also the. Some day people are going to have to figure out that we may have to pay a little bit more to do stuff.
And
it's just all not going to be free, and we can't keep doing what we're doing, so this is based all on cost. It's really not a very good way to do things, as far as I'm concerned.
These are questions that are coming up. There are MRFs, the material recovery facilities that are being shut down. There are jurisdictions that are pulling curbside programs. We should just be aware of that. Probably wouldn't be happening here. But there is a forum that I will send out to folks. We can certainly update you on it, but if you can attend and want to do that through SWAC, we can help assist with that. $65. It's at the McMinniman's Kennedy, and it's put on by the Association of Oregon Recyclers. And it's going to be 10 to 3:30 p.m. on December 10th, which is a Thursday. And they're going to be looking into this specific issue. So we'll have staff in attendance. But we can certainly open that up to folks.
I'd like to be notified of it. I'd like to go.
This is important. And if you want us to enroll you, let us know.
Do you have a flyer? Do you have a flyer?
Yeah, there's a flyer that we'll shoot out.
Shoot out to folks.
And that's all I had.
Were you talking specifically about use of natural resources and running out of resources eventually rather than trying to recycle and make those last longer?
Yeah, you know, keep making stuff, I mean, especially like plastics and everything, the oil that's used and all that. You can recycle stuff, you don't have to use so much of that. If people have to pay, see, I'm shocked in Washington that you don't have to pay a fee. I know it's done differently, but coming from California, or you go to Hawaii, or you go to any of these places, you're paying a dime, 15 cents or whatever for this stuff, and people then will recycle it because they want their 15 cents back. And it does save resources. Just aluminum is amazing, the resources you save if you can recycle. It's not just, it's energy and everything else. So it all goes into one, but if we don't, we can't live the way we're living right now. My feel is if we don't pay a little bit more and try to do some of these programs.
Oregon is a, you know, a good example of, you know, starting this out, and they're, I think even in their law, they said that the nickel had to work or it was going to go to a dime in April. So next April,
it's a dime, yeah.
It's going to be a dime.
Yeah, so, what's really amazing is if you go to a MRF in Oregon, you'll still see aluminum cans. You'll still see the water bottles that people have been collected.
Picking them up and getting the money for them. I mean, in the communities and stuff. I mean, my sister lives over there, and there's one guy, and everybody knows, hey, go pick these up, give it to him, and it helps him live, and he takes them in and he gets his money for them. So at least people know that they can get something for them. But yeah, you're right. They just keep throwing stuff out.
I take mine all to my brother-in-law. Because all of our Washington ones are, you know, worth a nickel, too. I just take them all.
That's why Portland's got 130% recycling.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Have you ever ridden a bus across the bridge? The guys get those great big bags of them, and they'll let them take them on the bus over to Safeway. Must be there for all day when he goes to the cheap.
The long line at Costco, too. I've been there in a long line waiting.
You want to bring up your pizza box?
Yeah, U.S. News and the Wall Street Journal had an article on pizza boxes. And of course, we're the home of the 425-degree Papa Murphy's pizza right here in Vancouver. And it says here, the Domino's Pizza delivers 200 million pizzas a year. And here they're at North Carolina College. They're figuring out how to recycle pizza boxes. And they said that lots of places, they'll tear the tops off, because the tops are always clean, but the bottoms aren't. So at least eliminate half of the struggle there. And then it says that they're working on different things, because this is obviously whatever our children are eating is pizza. So it said that there was a lot of it. It said that even on this one campus, it said they have placed dumpsters in 8 locations around the campus, and they've helped turn up approximately 16,000 greased tape boxes and turned them into fertilizer. They compost them. So I just thought that was interesting to share. Pizza boxes, because that's one thing we found. We did find in our load when we were picking through the thing, the pizza boxes, and that much of it. The other thing is I saw, I attended the Battleground collection that we did, and I was amazed at what they picked up, and the line around the you know, there were like 4 lines of traffic going into the place, and there, you know, they were just moving them along, and your crew was working really good. I saw Andrew in there, and he was working, but they were collecting block foam, and I thought we said we couldn't do that.
It's back on.
It's back on. You finally got somebody to do it?
It's Far West Fibers found a new home. They temporarily shut down, but they were able to relocate their equipment.
So you're pulling that out of your traffic? transfer station than the fall?
It's not a curbside recycling.
No,
it's not a
special event only.
Yeah, only.
Special event.
Yeah. Okay. Because I know a lot of it goes in there, you know, like out of Legacy Hospital. We got a big dumpster out there, and it's half foam, you know, and it all comes to you.
So we can't get rid of it? Like, there's no place, like, this one place to shut down here?
We wanted to reintroduce this at the Joe Work Center. Since they wouldn't do our paint, maybe they can do our block foam.
Oh, then there was
another. But we got to get Bill on board with that one.
That empowered me, you know, that empowered me up also.
Private money, that's
it. That empowered me up, moved again.
Yes, yes.
So we should put that out again because it was in the paper, but I didn't bring the slip of paper this time. But
it's, block foam, we'll add that to our discussion in the future.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else?
Good
Thank
endure.
You all. Have a great Thanksgiving.
And I'm try. I got that coming up this month. I forget which month things happen.
This month.
It's this month. It's Thanksgiving.
You've been too busy getting a lot.
I've been too busy.
And you brought the drinks tonight.
Yeah, I know.